It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Welcome to a special Christmas weekend edition of the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Each member of our staff will share a special Christmas thought or a story. We trust this will bless you as you enjoy your Christmas season. Well, I had to laugh as I watched the commercial. A woman and a man were running towards each other, just like you see in those old romantic movies. But as they got nearer and nearer, arms stretched out, ready for an embrace, then they passed by each other. The woman's face drops. She cries and she looks distressed. As she lifts her head, a red sweater is hanging on a clothesline in front of her. The tagline is, "The man may leave you, but the sweater never will." Well, this is hardly a Hallmark moment. But the idea that a gift can bring you joy is only true for a moment. Much more is needed for continuous joy. And there is one gift that lasts for a lifetime and brings comfort and joy. It's not the sweater. 'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, but I felt like a louse. As I gazed at the packages all in a row, I was aghast. The tree looked bulimic due to my past. I slumped to the floor. I grabbed hold of my man. "We have 2 children. There's enough here for 10. We stared at the swollen piles of toys. Surely this is too much for 1 girl and 1 boy. Slowly, we pick through the huge, bulging pile. Well, this one can wait for a little more while. 1 for next year, maybe 1 for a treat. Whittling the stack, our eyes again meet. We came to our senses. We lessened the gifts. Enough was still there. No one would get miffed. 'Next year, we pledged, we'll be different, you'll see. We'll keep it in balance when on Santa's knee. The season is known for its gift-giving treats. But Christ was born to sin's great defeat. The baby asleep in that manger so small would bring to us peace and joy for all. Our children would know the true meaning of this, a Christmas where Christ is truly our bliss. So gather around that more sensible tree and remember Jesus was born for you and for me." Cody Gokenhauer is our social media manager.
'Twas the night before Christmas, with a blanket of white that covered the earth all through the night. The tree sparkled like diamonds, with a glitter so bright that each little twinkle made its own Christmas light. A hope and a prayer, a white Christmas would be, awaiting the dawn so all could see. The beauty and joy a white Christmas does bring to the holiday season as carolers sing. For 'twas the night before Christmas, God answered your prayer, with a blanket of white placed with God's loving care.
And here's the man who makes our show a conversation, co-host Chris Weigel.
You know, I haven't been around for that long, but over the years there have been so many things to remember from Christmas time. Between my dad's side of the family and mom's side of the family, and my in-laws and my wife's side, that's a lot of memories to keep track of. I will say this, as life happens and our families grow in number and in age, family memories don't come to mind as easily until someone is gone. While death is painful no matter how you look at it, we've been fortunate in our family to have only lost 2 close family members in my time. My grandpa in 2004, which is mom's dad, and my grandmother in 2006, which is mom's mom. One of the funniest things to happen at grandpa's house on Christmas Day involved getting rid of what was left of the turkey we had for dinner. Across the street from Grandpa's house was a deep, wooded ravine. Generally, we would toss turkey bones and that type of thing into the ravine, assuming that some raccoons or foxes would most likely take advantage. Well, one particular Christmas, my mom gathered up the turkey bones into a foil pan. However, she forgot about them. She and the rest of the family said goodbye and left for the day, but I stayed around with Grandpa for a little bit longer. A few minutes after everyone left, My mom called and said, "Hey, are you still at Grandpa's house?" I said, "Yes, I'm still here." Then she said, "Well, before you leave, can you throw that old carcass over the hill?" I started laughing. Then Mom started laughing. I got off the phone with her and, of course, told Grandpa what she said, and he started laughing. Then he asked what he did to deserve getting thrown into the ravine. It was a special moment, and Grandpa was a very quiet individual, and he didn't say much. But he and I had a unique relationship. When he died just 2 weeks after Christmas in 2004, the family stopped gathering up. But it's funny times like throwing that old carcass over the hill that we won't forget. Now, my dad's side of the family is a very, and I do mean very, musical group of people. My granddad and grandma met at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music in the 1950s, and then they moved to Northern Virginia and were significant parts of the Music and Art Society. Granddad sang with the Robert Shaw Chorale at Carnegie Hall in New York City, and he traveled to Prague to commission new choral music. Grandma was an unusually talented trumpet player, and I remember seeing her play in pit orchestras for lots of theatrical productions. All five of their kids, one of them being my dad, of course, ended up either teaching music, directing, acting, conducting, or playing or singing. Well, all of that to say, one of the earliest memories of Christmas takes me to a small town in West Virginia where Grandma, with her trumpet, my Uncle Don with his trombone, my Aunt Ruth with her euphonium, the family friend, who we called Mac, with his clarinet, they would put together their little ensemble and go through the streets playing Christmas carols. Now, here's the thing. This may have only happened once, but for a little kid, I thought it was big time. Grandma let me play the kazoo, so I was also a part of the performance. And when I look back, the memory is so vivid, I assume it happened every year. Grandma's house was very Christmassy to me for some reason. And going back to the music for a minute, when I hear O Holy Night and Little Drummer Boy, I always end up, in my mind anyway, in Grandma's living room. Why? I have no idea. Maybe when I was a youngster, those two songs were playing in her living room and it stuck. It's a little unfortunate that we review these memories in our mind after someone has left us. We get so busy and we never stop and think about what life would be like without a certain family member. When I was a kid, did I ever think that caroling with my family and their brass ensemble would become a memory? Did I ever think that Oh Holy Night and Little Drummer Boy would take me back to Grandma's living room? Or did I think that every time I eat turkey, I would remember that hilarious story about throwing the carcass over the hill? Of course not. We live as we should in the moment and enjoy events and time together as they happen. We certainly don't want to spend the holidays and family time preparing for the day when it won't be available to us anymore. That, frankly, wouldn't be any fun. But I think it would be important to encourage the children, our own kids and our nieces and nephews and cousins, whoever it is in your family, to stop and take a moment to sear the moments into their mind. Pay attention to what the old people are saying at dinner. Is it a quiet family member who doesn't talk? Well, get something out of them. Insist that the young people in the family are engaged. I make a habit of telling my young girls to pay attention at dinner and see what the older family members are saying. How do I get them to do it? I tell them that generally somebody's going to say something really funny. And that keeps them interested for a while, especially if something hilarious does in fact happen. And if you know my family, it doesn't take long. Does this only have to happen at Christmas? Of course not. Family get-togethers are unique no matter when they happen, and you never know what could spring up and become a great memory. This time of year is usually when we start opining about family time and memories and such. But just remember, don't let the time slip by without taking a moment to recognize the value of what's happening around you. And then, make sure your kids are recognizing it too. If both generations can remember these things, it will perpetuate. The next thing you know, you'll have a little more gray hair, and your kids will probably have a few more kids of their own, and you're all sitting around the table remembering and making memories.
Linnell Fuller is our broadcast engineer.
Christmas Giving by Iris W. Bray. Christmas is for giving and for showing that we care, for honoring the Christ child with the loving gifts we share. The wise men gave of riches, the shepherds, faith, and love. Each gift in its own measure was smiled on from above. Let every gift be treasured. Not always size or price determines the extent of love and willing sacrifice. Handsome gifts with festive trim bring smiles of sweet content, but modest gifts of humble means are oftentimes heaven sent. Whether it be large or small, each gift will share in part the message of true Christmas joy, if given from the heart.
Tucker is our man on the street.
Once upon a time, there was a man who worked very hard just to keep food on the table for his family. This particular year, a few days before Christmas, he punished his little 5-year-old daughter after learning that she had used up the family's only roll of expensive gold wrapping paper. As money was tight, he became even more upset when on Christmas Eve, he saw that the child had used all of the expensive gold paper to decorate one shoebox she had put under the Christmas tree. He was also concerned about where she had gotten the money to buy what was in the shoebox. Nevertheless, the next morning, the little girl, filled with excitement, brought the gift box to her father and said, "This is for you, Daddy." As he opened the box, the father was embarrassed by his earlier overreaction, now regretting how he had punished her. But when he opened the shoebox, he found it was empty, and again his anger flared. "Don't you know, young lady," he said harshly, "when you give someone a present, there's supposed to be something inside the package." The little girl looked up at him with sad tears rolling from her eyes and whispered, "Daddy, it's not empty. I blew kisses into it until it was all full." The father was crushed. He fell on his knees and put his arms around his precious little girl. He begged her to forgive him for his unnecessary anger. An accident took the life of the child only a short time later. It is told that the father kept the little gold box by his bed for all the years of his life. Whenever he was discouraged or faced difficult problems, he would open the box, take out an imaginary kiss, and remember the love of this beautiful child who had put it there. In a very real sense, each of us has been given an invisible golden box filled with unconditional love and kisses from our children, family, friends, and God. There is no more precious possession anyone could ever hold.
Dr. Chris Underation is our post-producer.
It was Christmas Eve. In a small Russian village, children were playing in the streets. Down the street shuffled an old shoemaker. He waved at the children as he made his way to his small shop on the corner. The old shoemaker stopped and stood in the window of his store. He listened to the squeals of laughter as the children played, but his thoughts were far away. He did not have a family. And tomorrow, Christmas Day, he would be all alone. He sighed, picked up a big leather-bound book from a shelf, and rested in his big old chair. The book was the story of Christmas. He read how the wise men had brought gifts for Jesus. He scratched his head. He looked around his little shop and he thought to himself, "If Jesus visited me, what would I be able to give him?" Then he settled back in his chair, pulled up his favorite blanket, and before long, he became sleepy. As the old man slept, the children outside started to return to their homes, but a small group of children huddled together. They didn't have anywhere warm to go. They didn't have parents to care for them. They were orphans. Slowly, they made their way to the cold, empty orphanage across the way. Across the street from the orphanage, the old shoemaker was snoring gently. Suddenly, he was awakened by a voice in the room. "Dear old shoemaker, you were wondering what you could give me. Tonight, I'm going to visit you. Look out for me." The old shoemaker jumped to his feet and rubbed his eyes. Jesus was coming to visit. What could he give him? He was sure Jesus would like a hot drink on such a cold evening, so he lit his stove and put on a kettle of water. He was sure Jesus would also like something to eat. So he looked in the larder, and there was a fresh loaf of bread and some soup ready for warming. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and so he also wanted to give Jesus a special gift. But what could a poor shoemaker possibly give to Jesus? And all of a sudden, he knew. He would make Jesus a pair of his finest shoes. But what size were Jesus' feet? So he decided to make Jesus a pair of his finest shoes in every size, and that way Jesus could have a pair of shoes that fitted him the best. The shoemaker set to work at once.
and as he worked, the old shoemaker suddenly heard footsteps. He rushed to the window, but it wasn't Jesus. It was a young boy lighting lamps along the street. His coat was threadbare, and he shivered as he worked. "How cold he looks," thought the shoemaker. "I could give him my blanket. I still have some other gifts for Jesus." He shuffled outside with his blanket, and he wrapped it around the shoulders of the young boy. The boy stopped shivering, he smiled, and gratefully he thanked him and went on his way. The shoemaker returned to his shop and carried on working. Just then he heard voices outside. Maybe this was Jesus. He rushed to the door, but all he could see was a group of children singing carols. He listened, and he was deeply moved. The old shoemaker smiled and said, "Thank you. You must be thirsty after your singing. I have some hot drinks for you warming on my stove. Hold on just a minute while I get them for you." He got the drinks, he poured them all out, and then he waved them goodbye. No sooner had he gone back to his work than the old shoemaker heard a different set of footsteps. This must be Jesus. He rushed out into the street, but as the footsteps came closer, the old shoemaker recognized the figure of a poor widow and her children. They looked hungry, and he was moved. "Come in and have some of my soup," said the kind old shoemaker. The poor widow and her children ate, and then they thanked the shoemaker for his kindness, and they went on their way. The shoemaker looked up at his clock. It was getting late. He had to finish making his gift for Jesus. Every so often, he would look out the window to see if Jesus was coming down the street, but every time he looked, he saw no one. No one was coming. Just before dawn, he finished making his shoes. He had a pair ready in every size, but Jesus hadn't yet come to collect his gift. The shoemaker stared out the window, and he began to cry. Jesus had promised to visit him, but Jesus didn't come. Now what was he going to do with all the shoes he had made? And then he had an idea. He would get rid of the shoes by gathering them up in a sack, and then he tiptoed across the street and into the orphanage. He placed a pair of his finest shoes by the bed of each child, and then he tiptoed back to his shop, sat down in his comfortable chair. He was tired, and he closed his eyes. As he dozed, he heard the same voice that he heard the night before. "Thank you, kind shoemaker. I visited you last night, and you gave me warmth. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was hungry, and you fed me. And, kind shoemaker, I was in the orphanage, and you came to visit me. Thank you for giving me the finest pair of your shoes. Whatever you did for all these people, you did for me." At that, Christmas bells rang out across the village, and the shoemaker got up out of his chair. The orphans awoke, and they found their gifts, too. They put on the shoes and they rushed outside to play. The old shoemaker watched them come outside, and he shuffled outside to join in the Christmas celebrations. It was the happiest Christmas he ever had.
Professor Pam Miller produces our show and trains our student crew.
This is a reading of a portion of The Manger Mouse. When he awoke, he did not know where he was. It was as light as day, and yet the light was not daylight. It was a heaven light. He used to tell his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren that. The animals were all awake. The doves peered down from their perch. The hens, for once, were silent and cocked their heads to see better. The rooster stood guard right above the stall where the woman lay. The goats were all kneeling, and so were the oxen. And there was a strange crying sound. Sad, yet very sweet. Afraid, yet very full of vigor. It was a new baby, a new being in the world. It was the baby, the longed-for child, the messenger from heaven. And the creatures knew it, even if the world did not. A big moth fluttered in and settled on the woman's shoulder. She stirred and gave the child to the man. He folded him tenderly against him, and then laid him in the manger. The owl floated in on silent wings and found a watching place above the oxen. No one flinched. No one rushed to hide. No one feared. Then the archway was full of shepherds. Off came their hats, and down on their knees they went. The lady smiled. The man beckoned, and they came to see the child. They laid bread and cheese and a woolly fleece beneath the manger. They left, quiet as they had come, but their running footsteps could be heard on the road. After that, the villagers began to come, in twos and threes, shyly, quietly, in awe, bringing milk and porridge, a soft blanket woven of fine wool, a circlet of little bells to jingle in the baby's hand, apples and orange for the mother. All these lay at the foot of the manger. When they had all gone, a deep hush fell. The light winked down a little. Then the mouse looked round. Beside him sat the cat. The cat was not looking at him. The cat was looking at the manger where the baby lay. The mouse did not even feel a quiver of fear. He looked back at the manger. He looked again at the cat. He looked at the owl in the rafters, and he thought, "I am not afraid." Finally, the cat spoke. "Why were we chosen to witness this? Out of all of our kind, why were we chosen? You from the race of mice, I from the feline. I am cursed with lust and the need to kill in order to live or else be subservient to man, and you to be hunted all your days. Yet here we witness the dawn of the new paradise. Would men only see and believe it?" The mouse crouched, speechless beside the cat. He could not put into great words all that crowded his heart. Finally he said, "I would like to see the baby, but I am all stuck up with goat's milk. I am sure I smell most unseemly, and I cannot clean myself." The cat turned his head and looked at him. He sniffed the air. Then he spoke very softly and gently. "Would you grant me the privilege of cleaning you, O mouse? It would cleanse me a little of my guilt, and while I don't favor goat's milk, I would gladly clean you up." The mouse crept round in front of the cat. He looked at him fearlessly, and then he bowed his head meekly and submitted. With rasping yet gentle tongue, the cat began to lick. The little mouse toppled left and right under the licks. The cat laid a paw on the back of the mouse to steady him, and worked his way carefully all the way to the end of the little long tail. Then the mouse fluffed up his fur, and the cat washed his own face and paws vigorously. At last they were done. They sat by the wall. Then together they moved right across the floor to the manger. The cat made one graceful leap to the foot, where he stood staring in awe at the child. The mouse scurried up the end and sat by the cat, and they both looked and looked. They were there when the kings came, but they didn't know it. They were there all night, till finally the cock, not to be fooled by anything, knew that the everyday dawn had come, and he filled the stable with his crowing. "That cock is a conceited fellow," said the cat as they climbed down together. Then they went off to the same place by the wall and sat in silence for a long time. "You look and smell much better," said the cat. "Thank you," said the mouse. "Where are you going to live?" asked the cat. "I don't know. I have hardly begun," said the mouse. "May I make a suggestion?" "Please," said the mouse. "That manger," said the cat. "If you would set up your domicile in or near that manger, then never, never would the old lust seize me and the old power overcome me. Dear mouse, I bear guilt enough. In this place, by that manger, you will be safe, that I promise." "I will do it gladly," said the mouse. Then he sat for a moment. Finally he said, "I am a small mouse and very young, but what we have seen. Does it not speak of a dawn to come, when the dawn breaks new, and a new time is born, and we need not fear? Is there not a new Eden waiting for us?" "Yes," said the cat, "of that I am sure." They sat in silence for a while. Then the cat rose, stretched, and quietly went away. The mouse pattered across the earthen floor to the foot of the manger. There he carefully dragged together bits of hay and straw, making a little round nest quite neatly disguised. He crawled in and turned round and round. The lady reached over and laid some crumbs from the new loaf and a bit of cheese in front of his door. He lifted his head to thank her and then laid it down again. The manger mouse was asleep.
My husband and favorite fill-in guest co-host, Dr. Norm Mintel.
This is the story of the birth of Jesus as told to us by the Apostle Luke. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each to his own town. So Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the lineage of David. He was there to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. And in the same region there were shepherds out in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were filled with great fear. And the angel said to them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger." Suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those with whom he is pleased." When the angels went away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us." And they went, and with haste found Mary and Joseph, and the baby lying in a manger. And when they saw it, they made known the saying that had been told them concerning this child. And all who heard it wondered at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured up all these things, pondering them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen as it had been told them. And at the end of 8 days, when he was circumcised, he was called Jesus, the name given to him by the angel before he was conceived in the womb.
From all of us here at Faith Radio and the Dr. Linda Mintel Show, Merry Christmas.
The Dr. Linda Mintel Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.